to class. He's respectful to the media. He's respectful to the public. And he's a good kid. And he's not a professional athlete. And he doesn't deserve to be kicked when he's down. If your child goes down the street and somebody makes fun of him because he dropped a pass in a pickup game or says he's fat and he comes home crying to his mom, you'd understand. If you want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, you go after one that doesn't do the right things. You don't downgrade him because he does everything right and may not play as well on Saturday. And you let us make that decision. That's why I don't read the newspaper. Because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage. Attacking an amateur athlete for doing everything right. And then you want to write articles about guys that don't do things right and downgrade them, the ones that do make plays. Are you kidding me? Where are we at in society today? Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40. I'm not a kid. Write something about me or our coaches. Don't write about a kid that does everything right, that's heart's broken.
All right, that was head coach Mike Gundy from a few years ago, the famous quote that kind of put him on the map and put Oklahoma State on the map, in a sense, before they actually started winning some games, too. And I think the reason we started that off is because I'm sure most of you have at least looked at that Sports Illustrated story. And so we're just going to start off the podcast today by talking a little bit about it. And as you might have realized, if you've pressed play and you have gone to our website, that this is the Fourth and Short podcast. And I, myself, am Andrew Brown, and I'm joined by
Will Patton.
And Will, what are your thoughts on this? Okay, so CNNSI runs a big... I mean, it's a four-part story, I believe, and each day had a different topic and all these different things that went on at Oklahoma State. You know, what are your thoughts after this whole thing came out?
You know, when I first saw the story and read the first segment of it, which was about the money, and it just looked really bad.
Yeah.
And then there was all the other stories that were going to follow it up, and I just figured that this would become a major story. I thought that this was going to be bigger than Miami from a few years ago, that
right.
This was going to be something that everybody was talking about. And we're a few days into this, and I don't really feel like anybody's talking about it.
Right. It didn't have any traction. I think it's frustrating to the point that people read this, and it's just kind of like, shrug your shoulders. So what? We've seen it before. Everybody,
yeah.
You know, everybody does this. We're going to see it three more times this season. And it's almost that it's sad that in college sports, we've gotten to the point where people are so used to seeing this kind of thing happen that they aren't even really fazed by it.
Yeah. It's like no one's really calling for a punishment or anything. It's like when it was happening to Miami, everybody was just, it seemed like everybody kind of wanted them to be punished. And,
right.
But that story kind of fizzled as well, because here we are 3 years later and you still don't hear much about it, even though they
right.
did, you know, pull themselves out of the postseason for a few years and the self-imposed penalties. We're still kind of waiting around to see what the heck the NCAA is going to do, if they're going to do anything. But with this story, I feel like everybody's just kind of waiting for it to go away.
Yeah.
Like,
well, you know,
can it just go away and not, can we just not talk about this anymore because we're sick of hearing about this?
I think another thing, you brought up a good point, is that story, when did it break? It broke in December.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to talk about. So it's on the news all the time. ESPN's got no other story, so they keep talking about it. Here we are. In the middle of football season, if you are Oklahoma State, that's the perfect time for something like this to come out, because there's a whole new set of games and everybody's focused on their own team.
Yeah.
And so they just are kind of like, we'll see. And, you know, the question of what will the NCAA do about it, you look at that Miami thing like you were just talking about, with all of the allegations that were basically just handed to the NCAA and it's 3 years later and nothing has happened. Does anybody actually believe the NCAA can do anything with this?
No.
No. That Miami story is kind of the watermark, is that if people see that, and pretty much everybody would say, yeah, Miami is guilty of sin. Okay, if they are guilty of sin, everybody believes that in the court of public opinion, but the NCAA can't do anything about it. I think people get to the point where they're just like, well, you know what? The NCAA can't do anything to Miami. They're definitely not going to do anything here.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And then this is, you know, right on the heels of that story about Oklahoma State, there was a story about the five players in the SEC
right.
that were receiving illegal benefits.
Right, and one of them is still playing at Tennessee.
And one of them was a, you know, all-conference lineman with a national championship team.
Right, DJ Fulker, I think is his
name.
Yeah,
I think
Fluker?
That's his name.
DJ Fluker.
Yeah, and he was getting benefits from another form. Like, I guess the way it was happening was, I guess he was getting the perks from another former player who was getting them from somebody else. It was almost like it was laundered a little bit before it got to him. But apparently they have all the, you know, the texts, and they have evidence to prove
right.
that these people were involved with this.
The interesting thing here is that Yahoo Sports, who reported the story, basically they kind of were doing it to show that, hey, look, this goes on all the time. Mm-hmm. And they've said, we're not going to cooperate with the NCAA. And if they refuse to cooperate with the NCAA can't do anything. So this story that happens, we're all going to know it happened. We're going to know these players were paid. But we know also that nothing will ever come of it because the NCAA can't do anything. They don't have the right to do anything.
Which is so frustrating, Andrew.
Right.
I can't get over the frustration. I mean, I know this story is a few years old, and we've mentioned it several times on the Fourth and Short podcast, but none of this is all these stories that come out, and they were all so much worse than what Georgia Tech got in trouble for a few years ago.
You know, my question is there any reason to follow the rules?
Yeah, and that's what I'm trying to figure out, because the story with us getting our 2009 ACC championship, it's so much more complicated than it really needs to be, but you're right. Like, why should we follow the rules? And what was it a few years before that when we turned ourselves in for having some players that had, you know, they had taken the wrong classes or
right.
something like that?
Well, that stemmed from essentially what happened was a bunch of players had taken classes and they weren't – you have certain requirements in the NCAA. You have to be competing towards a degree, and these certain classes they were taking, they weren't – they didn't meet those requirements. And it was only uncovered because a bunch of players flunked out of school. And so when that happened, we went in and looked at it and said, oh, boy, and these other players took the wrong classes. Oops, that's our fault, RB. So we submitted that in, and a bunch of victories that we had were temporary. They were actually taken away also. We did get those reinstated. But, you know, it does.
Well, we lost some scholarships as well.
We did. We lost a bunch of scholarships.
Six,
and it, you know,
six
it
scholarships.
Proves, yeah, that you didn't, you know, you doing things by the rules doesn't always pay off.
Yeah, and then you have these other schools that are not playing by the rules. You have individuals that are not playing by the rules. And the NCAA doesn't seem to want to really do anything about it. And so what I guess my whole argument is the people, the administrators and the athletic department at Georgia Tech, can they look at this situation and make any sort of effort whatsoever to get our 2009 ACC championship game or that win back? Is that possible at all?
I mean, no. Once the appeal is done, it's done. There's nothing that you can do. And that's the thing that you have to – there's a reason why a lot of people question the NCAA and don't like the NCAA. Because you look at what happens with Miami. You look at what happens with UNC. If you are a fan of Georgia Tech, if you're a fan of Ohio State – you have to be kind of scratching your head and say, well, why did we get in this much trouble when these other people just kind of get to, you know, walk off free? And something that I've always had a problem with, and I'll start with our case because it's not as bad as what I'm about to say. So in our case, the person who headed up the investigation was a graduate of the University of North Carolina. And
yeah.
A lot of people raised hell about that and so that's not fair. Why should it be? They shouldn't be somebody who, you know, has some ties to the conference that we're in, so obviously we play them, so they're not going to like us very much. And the NCAA's response was, well, you don't think, and this is a pretty much a direct quote from the NCAA's infractions office, you don't think everybody who works at the NCAA loves sports and got into it because they have an affiliation with some school? And I was like, that's a complete slap in the face. You're telling me that you don't have somebody who went to the University of Washington that works at the NCAA that could handle our case? And I mean, that's just
not a conference rival.
Absolutely not. And so then that is bad. But the person who was handling the case, and you can go check my facts on this, and the person who handled the case for the University of Miami was a University of Florida grad.
Yeah, that's not right.
If I was a Miami fan, and I think Miami was guilty, okay? But if I was a fan of or an alumni of the University of Miami, I would be furious. How the heck are you supposed to get due process when you have somebody who's obviously hates you anyway? That person is going to walk onto Miami with an agenda. There's no way you can't. I don't care what you say. Just like a sports journalist, if they say, well, you know, I'm not biased, I'm a journalist. Yeah, right. There's no way.
Yeah.
You can't just turn that off. So you're going to walk onto the University of Miami's campus. You're ready to find something wrong because you don't like them. It's your rival. So you're telling me at the NCAA you had nobody else. The only person that you could send on this case was one of your biggest rivals? To me, I mean, that honestly, when I heard that, I was like, gosh, I just need to go work for the NCAA. We'll put Georgia on probation forever. You know, I mean, that's just kind of the kind of lunacy there. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I completely agree. You're getting a little hot-headed. Are you okay, Andrew?
Yeah, I'll drink some water.
Okay. All right. So, Andrew, I don't know if you know this or not.
Yeah.
But there's football this weekend.
There is.
There's games.
There are. So, there's the first game, in fact, on Thursday night is the old Textile Bowl.
Yeah, the Textile Bowl. Lead us off with that. Okay, so this is Clemson at NC State, Thursday night game.
Yeah.
Clemson, number 3 in the country, riding a hot streak. Everybody's talking about Clemson. Taj Boyd is still in, you know, talks for like a Heisman contender.
Right.
Then you got little old NC State. Does NC State, do they have a chance at all in this game?
Yeah, you know, let's back up. And this is 2013, so if you follow sports, you always do home away, home away. So 2 years ago, in 2011, the last time Clemson visited NC State, Clemson was a really big favorite, I would say double-digit favorite, over NC State. NC State basically destroyed Clemson, won the game 37-13, and it kind of knocked out Clemson's season for a little bit. They did go on to win some more games, but I mean, at that point, they only had one loss. People were still kind of
putting
them...
Was that the week after we beat them in 2011? Because didn't they go in a little
down streak?
Yeah, they, a losing streak.
Right, so let me check.
I'll verify that.
Yeah, so
it was 2 weeks
later. 2 weeks
after. It was 2 weeks after.
And it was a pretty bad loss for them. I mean, they just couldn't seem to get anything going. I don't know. It was bad. So it is developing into a little bit of a rivalry. It always has been. It's been a long time rivalry here in the ACC. But this has some interesting stories because can NC State do it again? Now, that NC State team is not the same at all as this NC State team. I had picked NC State at the beginning of the season. I thought, hey, this could be a dark horse. They've got a lot of good players. Dave Dorian coming in with his kind of high-paced offense. They're going to score a lot of points. You know, they could really turn some heads. Now, the problem with NC State is that their starting quarterback, Brandon Mitchell, is out. And they're using their backup. And the last game they played, they didn't look very good. They barely
almost
escaped.
Lost to Richmond, the Spiders.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that when you're a new coach, you come in and you don't have as much depth as you might like, especially at quarterback. This is not going to be good for them. And so I really think if they were at full speed, I might be picking NC State. But I think Clemson is going to be way too powerful, and they just don't have enough right now.
Yeah, I can agree with that. So 2 years ago, both two teams knocked them off that were not supposed to knock them off, Georgia Tech and NC State. But this year, I'm not going to say I'm not going to make a prediction about the Georgia Tech Clemson game because it's way on down the road. But this year, I do not believe that NC State has really that great of a shot against Clemson. But it'll be interesting to watch nonetheless.
Right. It will be. I think it'll be a good game. I think there'll be a lot of points scored. But I just think Clemson is too much for NC State. And here's my thing is I think in the coming years, Dave Dorian, what he's going to do at NC State, he's going to bring in some good players. I think they will improve a lot. I just don't think they're there yet.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's unfortunate because I would like to see what they could do if they had their quarterback there. But, I think it'll still be a good game, and I think that we'll see a lot of points scored. And it's a Thursday night game, so we know Carter Finley will be really rocking, and those NC State Wolfpack fans will really be getting out for him.
Definitely. Another big game, ACC game.
Involves the state of North Carolina.
Yeah. I think it's kind of interesting, Andrew, that the first three games that Georgia Tech is playing are all against North Carolina schools.
Now, if you want another little statistic, I think this might come from the Patrick's Obscure Georgia Tech Stats magazine that I subscribe to. Do you get that one, Will?
I get it every now and then.
Well, anyway, this one, I believe I saw a statistic that said Coach Paul Johnson in his time at Georgia Tech is 16-2 against teams from North Carolina.
Wow, that's really good.
So that's a pretty good stat. I think we lost to North Carolina in Paul Johnson's first year, and then we lost to NC State 2010, maybe? I think those are the only two times.
Yeah, huh.
So that side of it makes us look like, okay, if stats are on our side, maybe we can come out of there. But this is going to be an interesting game.
It's funny, a couple weeks ago, Larry Fedora kind of came out swinging a little bit against Tech, a little bit indirectly, and we mentioned it on the podcast, but basically he said something along the lines of talking about Middle Tennessee State, that they might be good, that they had beaten a so-called big program last year, obviously referring to us. So I don't really know if Fedora is trying to get under PJ's skin, but I don't think he's really in the position to do it because of the drumming that they took last year.
Well, now here's the other thing, Will. Do you remember when the University of North Carolina put a billboard up about being the ACC Coastal Division champs and making rings talking about being the Coastal Division champs?
Where did they put that billboard up, Andrew?
I believe it was in Atlanta.
Oh, was it Atlanta? Okay.
Yeah. And in fact, there was a reporter for... No, I take that back. It wasn't a reporter. There was a congressman or the secretary of state, some U.S. politician or Georgia politician, tweeted about how they liked seeing that or something, and they made some kind of derogatory message about Georgia Tech, and they tweeted it and ended up getting something like 100,000 emails and calls to their office within the day because people were so upset about them making a tweet about Tech because of that billboard. So, not really the brightest idea if you're a Georgia congressman to make a derogatory comment about a state school that, you're funding. And
yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so I think that comment is just one comment in a long line of things that the University of North Carolina has done in the past year to get under Coach Paul Johnson's skin.
Yeah, so here's the thing, and there's only one thing that I could see that would prevent this happening, but and that's basically that we have Virginia Tech 5 days after the game against North Carolina. But if that wasn't the case, I don't see how there'd be any way that Paul Johnson would let off the gas in this game.
Right, I don't think so either. This game, if we start winning, I think we're going to score a lot of points.
I think it could be do you think it's going to be like a 2011 Kansas situation where we just went nuts with like 600 and something rushing yards? Like,
no.
Are we getting ahead of ourselves here?
I think that you're right. If we're angry about it, I know that Paul Johnson is not happy. And he's going to let him know about it because Paul Johnson is a great motivator. And he's not going to let them forget about the fact that all these things have happened and that they are slighting us and talking about how they were better than us and should have been in the ACC championship game. And so they need to remember that they didn't even beat us last year.
Yeah.
So it's a home game, which is great. I think we score a lot of points, but, you know, then again.
I'm still not sold on North Carolina. They played a pretty good game a couple weeks ago against Middle Tennessee, but we talked about this earlier in our Episode Zero podcast, kind of a preview to the season. They're very, very young and inexperienced in a lot of areas on the field.
Right. Look at their – I'm going to read off offensive line. Their offensive line, left tackle, senior, left guard, freshman, center, junior, right guard, sophomore, right tackle, freshman.
Yeah,
you've got three underclassmen on your don't want to do that. That's not a recipe for success.
Yeah, exactly. And I know we can't really compare our line to South Carolina's line, but they just got completely manhandled for most of the game, even with Clowney kind of playing at half speed. They did not look very good and couldn't get anything rolling on offense. So it'll be really interesting to see how good they look on offense. As for defense, I just can't see them. As bad as they played against us last year, and with this being a home game, I feel like Vadui is going to go nuts again. That said, also, bringing up Vadui has been given ACC Player of the Week. Did you see that, Andrew?
Wow, that's big. That's really impressive. You know,
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so, hats off to Vad. He played a great game. Really great young man. Really,
and like we said last time around, there's room for improvement. So he had ACC Player of the Week with plenty of room for improvement. So hopefully he'll keep growing and we'll see an even better performance this week.
Yeah, and here's the thing. This is one of those things where I keep trying to look at this game objectively,
yeah,
and not as a homer, but you know, I really do believe that we can win this game.
Big, I think
this is a. I'm not as convinced as you. I think this is more of a. I think this will be a 38-28 game.
See, I just can't see them putting up those kind of points, and if that does happen, I feel like we'll just score more than that. I don't know. I just have a feeling that we're going to go nuts in this game. And I'm trying to approach it from an objective standpoint as well.
Well, see, but and the thing is,
has done this year has shown me that they're really that good.
Yeah, and they, like we say, you know, Larry Fedora runs a very fast-paced offense, so there's going to be a lot of possessions.
Exactly, and that's why I think we're going to score a lot of points.
Right.
With Duke last week, Duke's not running a really fast-paced offense. They tried to a couple of times, but most of the time when they had the ball, they ran kind of a traditional, you know, standard speed offense.
Right.
And it limited the possessions on both sides of the football. North Carolina's not going to do that.
Yeah, there could be a lot of possessions in this game.
Yeah, and there could be – if they have a few third and out or three and outs, then we could really take advantage of that and score some points. So
yeah. It'll be interesting to see. I think this is going to be this is a very telling game. We're going to know, after these first couple games, I think you have a lot of question marks. You're going to know where you stand when the zeros hit on this game. You will know exactly where your team is, in my opinion.
And if there's still question marks, we will know exactly where we are 5 weeks later.
Right, exactly. The next week and a half, we're going to know a lot about our team.
Yeah. Another team in the Atlanta area, Andrew, that we are learning to know more and more about is our friends not very far away from Tech. Just what? Maybe a mile and a half, 2 miles south of Tech?
I don't know. Are they our friends? I don't know.
They're neighbors. We can be neighborly and call them friends.
Yeah. Well, they were our neighbors that a few years ago were coming on our message boards and talking about how they were going to run the city. And they were going to take over, and Georgia Tech was going to be just a bygone team that couldn't get any players by the time that this team was 10 years down the road. So if you haven't figured out yet, this is the Georgia State Panthers. I believe they're the Panthers.
Yeah, Panthers.
And they are the their football program where they are struggling right now to get 15,000 fans to their games, which I don't know how many of our listeners know, but if you average less than 15,000 fans per game for two straight seasons, then you will be demoted from Division One.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was a few years ago. Temple had that issue where they were getting kind of close because they weren't getting fans, and so they almost got demoted down, and that was kind of right around the time that they got good for a few years. And you know, now they just lost to a 1AA last week, so they're kind of back in the doldrums. But anyway, that's a side point. Georgia State is in a lot of trouble right now.
Okay, so let's back up, because this is becoming, especially in the state of Georgia, this is becoming a very, very common trend with schools that aren't traditionally football schools all of a sudden wanting to get programs, and then other schools moving up, right. Georgia Southern, for example. But right. Just in the last few years, we've seen, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, because I believe there's three of them, but there's Georgia State, Kennesaw, and Mercer, and I believe I may be wrong.
I think didn't West Georgia start a program?
Well, no, West Georgia's had one, and then I think Barry is maybe considering getting one as well.
Yep. I think Barry and Shorter are both starting programs.
Yeah. Well, no, Shorter has one. Shorter has one.
Well, then Shorter moved up then because
that
they
must
had something.
Be it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, basically, it's gotten to the point where the Board of Regents now has to approve those kinds of decisions because it's getting out of control, and there's so much resources going to these programs. There's so much money that we don't have where, you know, look, an athletic department is good. If it can sustain itself, the Board of Regents is going to just keep their paws out of it. They don't care. It's money. It's good. And that's what these people are looking at. They're looking at the numbers, and they're saying that, hey, there's a lot of money to be had. If we just start a football program, we'll just get in on the cash cow. People are going to come, and we'll get all this money from it. And unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. It shows that it doesn't work that way. And it's really unfortunate because now the Board of Regents is involved, and they've basically put a hold on it after Kennesaw went and started a program. And they said, okay, that's it. Nobody else can start a program unless we okay it. I mean, yeah. I don't know who at this point is left. I mean, Georgia College. I mean, you know, we're getting ridiculous. Why these schools have programs, I don't know.
And also, it's the type of school too.
Commuter college.
Yeah, yes. Georgia State and Kennesaw are kind of considered commuter colleges, where you're not really. I feel like it would be so difficult.
Right.
To get a fan base amongst the students and then maintain it after those students graduate.
Absolutely. If you remember, well, when I started college, my first year of college, I didn't go to Georgia Tech. I transferred in, and I went to a small school, Armstrong Atlantic, in Savannah. And I didn't go to any sporting events when I was there.
Yeah.
I didn't know anybody who did go to sporting events. I mean, they had a basketball team, but you could get in for free. Nobody ever went. I don't know that they were any good. I have no idea. Because you're not really a part of much of a community because you don't. Not many people live on campus. Most people are from the area, so they leave and go to their job or do whatever else. And, you know, you already have other things that you're doing. It's just not the same thing. And so when you graduate, if you do graduate from there, like my sister graduated from there, she doesn't go to, I think she might have in her whole time there went to one basketball game. So you just don't, it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, most of the people there probably wear, you know, a Georgia G hat and that's it.
Yeah.
They're going to be in Athens on Saturday, or maybe, hopefully, they'll be in Atlanta on Saturday. They're not going to be at a Georgia State game. They're not going to be at a Kennesaw State.
Like at Georgia State, for example, before they got their football team, I don't know if you knew this, and I was in the marching band at Georgia Tech.
Right.
And
I did know that, Will.
The next thing I'm about to say.
Oh,
but
right.
Several members of the Georgia Tech marching band were students at Georgia State and Agnes Scott.
Ah.
And there's a lot of people who they want, you know, they were interested in, you know, being a part of college football, and they wanted to be in a marching band, they would make the trek over to Tech's campus and be in our marching band.
Right.
And it wasn't a whole lot of people. It was maybe, I don't know, close to 10% of the band. So, you know, probably between 30 and 40 people in any given year. But those were the people that were interested in doing that. And I just don't know if you're going to be able to get enough support, because I don't know what kind of band they have over there, or if there's any interest in doing that. I know at Georgia State, you know, we were talking about them struggling to get 15,000 people to games. They're having trouble getting 8,000 people to games.
Right, right. Yeah, the last home game they had last week, they were in a away game. They went and got blown out. They're 0-3 now. They've lost to two Division II teams already. Or Division I AA, sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
So lower Division II games that, you know, you should win if you're a Division I team. Before the season, the USA Today rated them the worst team in Division I at 120 out of 120. And their announced attendance was 14,000. That means that 14,000 people paid. And I think I read that a season ticket to Georgia State football games is $60.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's like 10 bucks a game.
Right. Yeah. So $60 and you can get 15,000 people. And at the last home game, 5,000 people showed up. They showed a picture. I mean, there's nobody there. There's no students there.
Yeah. Well, they play at the Georgia Dome, which makes it even worse, because, I mean, if you were playing in a stadium, like a high school stadium,
right,
then 5,000 people would look okay. But if you're playing in a stadium that has close to 80,000 seats, and you have 5,000 people in there, it looks completely empty.
Right. And it's bad, because here's the thing. If you're Georgia Tech, or you're Georgia, you've been around for...
ever.
Since the beginning of football. Okay? So you've had several generations. You could organically build up your fan base, because people start rooting for a team when they're a little kid, and they keep going. Well, if you're Georgia State, you're just coming in and you're hoping that, okay, our alumni base, maybe we'll get some of our alumni to come to games. But nobody else, if I'm just man on the street, I'm not going to be a Georgia State fan. I didn't grow up being a Georgia State fan.
Yeah, and if you had to choose in Atlanta between going to Georgia Tech game and going to Georgia State, regardless of what you think about Georgia Tech, I can't imagine you would pick State over...
Right.
If you're a sidewalk fan,
if you're a sidewalk fan, you might go once. Just
walk
to see
into
what it's
an
all
empty
about.
Georgia Dome, or you could walk into a pretty full Bobby Dodd Stadium.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and see, here's the problem: is that Georgia Tech, when they first started playing football, there were no pro teams.
Yeah.
There was nothing else to do in the city of Atlanta. So what did you do? You went to a Georgia Tech game. So then the pro teams happened. They started coming. So I mean, yes, Georgia Tech has taken some of a hit because people can go to a Falcons game on Sunday, but you still have people who grew up as a fan of Georgia Tech, and you have alumni who, when they were in school, they would go to games, and they remember the experience of how much fun it was, and so they continue to go throughout the rest of their lives. Well, if you're a Georgia State alum, you didn't go to football games when you were growing up. You probably lived on the outskirts of Atlanta and drove into town to go to school and then drove home.
Yeah.
So
and there's
why,
nothing wrong with that. I mean,
no, absolutely nothing wrong. But why now, when you're 40 or 50, are you going to start going to games
that you feel no connection to?
We have no connection. You didn't, you know, the campus looks completely different. And see, basically, the problem is this: there's a lot of money to be had in certain scenarios. Everybody thinks they can just get the money, no big deal. They look at a couple of instances where people were able to start up a program and be successful, but it's a lightning rod. It's just, you're trying to catch lightning in a bottle. Okay, you can do it once, but not everybody's going to have that success. And so they're seeing that happen several times. People starting these programs and just not having any success. And basically in 97, the University of South Florida started a football program. Okay. In the state of Florida, you've already got Florida, you've already got Florida State, you've already got Miami, okay? There doesn't look to be any reason to start another program. You have a guy named Jim Leavitt who says, you know what, we're going to start this program. He starts from the ground up. They sign a deal with Pro Player Stadium, or that's not right, with Raymond James Stadium in Tampa. So they're playing their games in Tampa, and he is very good at building the program. He gets them to the point in 2007 where they are ranked as high as number two in the country, okay? Mm-hmm. And that kind of thing builds the program up, and people start going to the games, and they get on TV a lot. You know, it's lightning in a bottle because they're able to move up to Division I, and they're in a BCS conference within 10 years, okay? The chances of that happening are one in a million. They just happen to be at the right place at the right time. They were in Florida. All these conferences wanted a Florida team because it looks good to be like, oh, I've got a team from Florida. And all this expansion happened right in the middle of it, and so they were able to move up. And then they were very successful. Okay, so they fired Jim Leavitt. Terrible decision. It happened at the same time around Mike Leach, and so everybody was like, oh, coaches are mishandling players. He, on the sideline, got right in a player's face, and I think some people say he slapped him. There wasn't conclusive evidence. It was a terrible decision. Fire Jim Leavitt, and since Jim Leavitt left, okay, USF has been on a free fall. This year they've looked terrible. I don't think they've won a game. So you can see that it takes a very special person to be able to come in and win games immediately right off the bat at a program when you start up, because how do you get recruits to come there? You know, you have to be a great salesman to be able to get recruits. Has Georgia State gotten anybody to come play there? Can you name any of the players? Or are they being talked about on ESPN or AJC as, hey, Georgia State landed a killer recruit?
Nope, nothing like that.
Okay, can you name anybody on the coaching staff? Do you know any of these people? Are they, you know, are they in the news at all?
Nope.
No. In fact, I will give you a little fun fact, this is not from the Patrick Brown stats, but Jeff Jagosinski, the former head coach at Boston College, is the offensive coordinator at Georgia State.
Well, how about that? I didn't know that.
Yeah, and their offense is terrible. They're just not able to do anything. They don't have the athletes. The head coach, after the second game, even said, we don't look like a 1AA program.
That's bad.
Yeah, very bad. It's I don't know how this program can continue to sustain itself. I really don't.
Well, let me ask you this then. Is their program still around 10 years from now?
Look, I think within 10 years, college football is going to have a major shakeup anyway.
Yeah.
So they're not. Look, they're in the Sun Belt. They're not playing in the same caliber as the SEC, ACC, Big Ten.
And you got teams like Appalachian State and Georgia Southern moving up, and they're not going to have any chance against teams like that.
Okay, yeah, and here's the difference. If you are an athlete, you haven't been recruited by Georgia or Georgia Tech, you're from Georgia, let's say you're from Atlanta, okay? You get a call from Georgia State, you get a call from Georgia Southern. Where are you going
to
go?
You're going to go to Georgia Southern.
You're going to go to Georgia Southern. Because what else is there in Georgia Southern? You are it. Everybody's going to be talking about you on Sunday morning. You win the game, you're on the front page of the Statesboro
newspaper. And that stadium is usually pretty full. Like,
pretty full.
Georgia Southern
rocking.
Football is a big deal down there.
A huge deal. In Statesboro, they care about the Eagles football program.
They do.
Okay? They care about it. They talk about all the wins. I mean, they can tell you. If you know somebody who went to Georgia Southern, I mean, they can take a list and they can tell you about first championship, Irk Russell, second championship, Irk Russell, third championship, Irk Russell, Tim Stowers, fourth one, Paul Johnson, 5-6. They can tell you about every one of their championships. They can name you players. They can do everything. Okay, they know the program. It's not the same at Georgia State. Georgia Southern organically is moving up. I don't agree with moving up to Division I, but they were in Division II or Division I delay for a long time before they move up to Division I. They had time to grow their program.
Yeah.
Georgia State hadn't done any of that. And so if you're a player, you know that if you win a game at Georgia State on Saturday, you open up the AJC on Sunday morning, you might be on the back page.
Yeah, even if they beat West Virginia this past weekend.
You might be on the back page.
Yeah.
If you are in Statesboro and you win a game, you're going to be on the front page of the newspaper.
Yep.
So if I'm an athlete and I have to choose between those two schools, there's no way. In Atlanta, you can name five things that are going to be more important than Georgia State football every week?
More than five.
More than five. Yeah, more than five. I mean, you can name off. I mean, there's just going to be
Because there's going to be a lot of high school Falcons. Football games.
Right, that's true. That's true.
There's football games that will draw more than
right. Georgia on State Sunday on Sunday morning, you're going to have Falcons page. You're going to have Georgia's page. You're going to have Georgia Tech's page. You're probably going to have Auburn and Alabama on there.
And,
you know,
you have to compete with the Braves as well, and you know, depending on the time of year.
Right, the Braves, Hawks, and then the Hawks are both going to be there around that time. So there's no reason to go there and be relegated to the back page. If I'm a player, you know, and here's the thing. Georgia State, they did a good job at bringing in some facilities, but they did not. Here's the difference between being in Division I and Division I AA. Okay, when they're in Division I, you have no chance of getting transfers in. Bill Curry, when he was first there, he was able to lure a lot of these players who weren't, kind of maybe were the backups. We got a couple players from Georgia Tech graduated, and they played their last year at Georgia State because they could play immediately. So that's how he was able to load up his players. His first year, he won six games. Okay? You're not going to be able to do that now that you're Division I. You can't get – your transfer rules are not the same. So there's no way you're going to be able to get any athletes to come there.
Yeah.
It's just a very, very sad situation.
Yeah, there's going to be some rough times ahead for Georgia State in the next few years. And it'll be really interesting to see what happens at schools like Kennesaw and Mercer. I do think that Kennesaw is going to have a good coach with Bohannon running the show.
They're doing something different. You know, they're running triple option. That's going to be different. You're going to be able to get some different athletes there. That is.
But I still think that it's going to be really, really tough to recruit all those different types of programs. I will say that having three college football teams in the state that are running Paul Johnson's offense, basically, because you have, you know, Jeff Monken at Southern and Brian Bohannon at Kennesaw, I think that's going to encourage a lot of high schools in the area to run those types of offenses, just because they're going to be going to those camps that those coaches run, and I feel like that is just going to be good for us, because if you start producing really good option quarterbacks or really good running backs that fit well in option offenses or linemen or whatever,
we'll be able to evaluate that.
Yeah, we'll get the best pick, because we're still going to be the big time college football. You know, who knows if that'll last forever. You know, what if Georgia Southern really makes it big in the Sun Belt and gets bumped into a whatever we're going to call the BCS League 10 years from now? Who knows? But at least for the time being, I feel like having those schools in the state is going to be good for Tech. But
if you look at the numbers, though, unfortunately, and I love Georgia Southern. I absolutely love Georgia Southern. Georgia Southern's athletic budget right now is in the middle of the pack in Division I AA,
in the
FCS. When it comes into FBS, it's going to be one of the five lowest athletic budgets in the country.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty tough to maintain.
Right.
Maintain a hot streak and keep getting those recruits to actually compete, because, you know, say what you will about Georgia Southern, it is party time USA there. I mean, it's a big party school, and if you can get the recruits that like that type of atmosphere, that's great. But it's also in Statesboro, and there is not much in Statesboro. I mean, if you like Nats, I guess, it works out really well. But there's not much outside of the stuff that's on campus. There's not really that much to do in Statesboro.
I mean, look, Nats are good protein.
That's true.
I mean, you're going to eat some if you live in South Georgia.
And with that note, let's go on to the picks of the week. We'll run through these pretty quick.
Right.
Not too many real, nail biters this week.
Outside of the Textile Bowl.
Yeah. So we have, that's this first one, Clemson, North Carolina State. I'm going Clemson. I think they run all over North Carolina State. What do you think?
Tigers. Yeah, Tigers big.
Yep. Next game is North Carolina at Georgia Tech.
I'm going to pick Tech.
I completely agree with you.
Next one would be Marshall at Virginia Tech, and gosh darn it, I don't know. Virginia Tech, it looks very shaky. So, but that being said, Virginia Tech's defense, I think, is very good. So I think they might win, but they might win 6-3.
Yeah, I feel like this one's going to be another low-scoring affair. Marshall, you know, they're still – they're not going to put up a huge fight, I don't think, but – oh gosh, I just don't know what to say about Virginia Tech. They're a really confusing school. So
yeah, I don't know. It their defense is good.
Their defense is good. There's no argument about that. But as far as the rest of their team, I don't know. But I'm still gonna go with Virginia Tech in that game.
Yeah, I am too.
Okay, we have a couple of tough ones here. Wake Forest at Army. What do you think?
You know how I like Jim Grobe. I think that they're going to rebound here, and I really think that Wake is going to win this one.
Yeah, I agree with you. Army lost this past week, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, they did lose.
Yeah, but Army is not – they run an option, but yeah, they lost to Stanford, so that's no surprise there. But they're 1-2 in the season.
Yeah, Rich Ellerson, the head coach over there at Army, used to work on Paul Johnson's staff when I believe he was in Hawaii. So, I mean, they do run the same kind of triple option. It's more of a traditional, very traditional triple option offense, more like what he ran at Navy. So it'll be interesting. I think there won't be many possessions, but I do think that Wake is going to rebound, and I think they're, you know, I really believe in Wake. And I think they can win this one.
Yeah, I agree with you. The next one, this might be the toughest one of all in this week, for me anyway, is Pittsburgh at Duke. What do you think?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I am going to say that I think Duke can win. It's a home game for Duke. I'm not really convinced that Pittsburgh is great. I mean, they did win this last week.
And they scored a lot of points in that game.
They did. But I really think Duke could win this one.
Yeah. Man. I don't know.
It's a home game. It's a home game for Duke, which means it's like a neutral site.
Yeah. I'm going to go out on a limb on this one, and I'm going to say Pittsburgh.
Okay.
I don't know.
I think that's probably a pretty good pick. I mean, I could talk myself into Pittsburgh winning the game too, but I'm going to stick with Duke just because
yeah, I almost kind of feel like I'm going to pull for Duke in this game, but I'm going to go Pittsburgh on this one.
But, you know, the next time you talk to a Duke fan, they're definitely going to talk to you about cut blocks and illegal they are. So,
I heard
did
that,
you see
like,
that?
Nine Duke players had to get their legs amputated for this past game. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, Coach Cutcliffe, after the game, I don't know if any of you are aware, he did in the press conference talk about how cut blocks should be illegal in college football. So.
Yeah, so.
That doesn't, but I still am going to say that I think Duke can win the game.
Yeah. Tulane at Syracuse.
You know, I think Syracuse can win this one. I think this is going to be a big game between two domed teams. So we'll see how that goes.
There you go. I'm going to go Syracuse as well. West Virginia at Maryland. This is an interesting one.
You know, it is an interesting game. An old rivalry from the old days. And you know how I don't like picking Maryland.
Yeah, you haven't really been picking them much this year. Our Maryland fans are a little unhappy with you so far.
Yeah, we've gotten some emails from the Terps, and you know, I'm gonna go out and say, look, I like Maryland, but I don't like them in this game. I'm gonna pick West Virginia. I think they're gonna win this one.
You know what? I am going to go counter. I'm gonna pick Maryland in this game.
Okay.
I think Maryland is gonna shock the world and beat a 2-1 West Virginia team.
You know, here's the thing: is that I think at West Virginia they're probably paying their players more than they are at Maryland. So
good point. I'm still picking Maryland.
Okay.
Okay. Next game: Virginia Military Institute at Virginia.
Ooh, little in-state rivalry there.
Yeah.
I think the Hoos are gonna win that one.
I agree.
Pretty big.
Here we go: Bethune-Cookman at Florida State.
You know, Will, I had this one on docket for earlier in the game or in the podcast, but I think this is going to be a big game. Jameis Winston might not throw an incomplete pass in this game.
Man, wouldn't that be awesome?
I think this one could be, you know, 63-7. It's going to be a big win for Florida State.
Okay, I agree with you. Savannah State at Miami.
Now, you know, Will, and I am from Savannah, and you know, many a time I have ventured onto the Savannah State campus and gone to football games there. So you know, I have a little affinity for the program, the Tiger program, but there is no way they can beat Miami, and they're gonna lose big.
I agree. Miami for the win. Now on to the SEC, Vanderbilt at Massachusetts.
Now this is another interesting, Massachusetts is another one of these programs that just kind of moved up to Division I, new program. They aren't very good. So same kind of thing as Georgia State, Vanderbilt's going to destroy them.
I agree. Vandy wins. North Texas at Georgia.
Yeah, North Texas doesn't have a chance.
Yeah, I think Georgia scores a whole bunch of points in this game, coming off an off week.
Yeah, this is going to be something like 49-0, I would assume.
Yeah, I could see it. Maybe even worse than that. Arkansas at Rutgers.
I'm going to pick Arkansas in this one.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think Rutgers, they're not the Scarlet Knights of old. You know what I mean? Well, old, I mean like 4 years ago.
Yeah, the old Scarlet Knights weren't very good either. Yeah. So maybe they are the Scarlet Knights.
Oh, there old. You go. Okay, Tennessee at Florida.
You know, earlier I had said that I think that Florida wins big on this one. But, you know, I don't know. Florida can't score. But at the same time, we don't really know anything about Tennessee.
No, not really.
Tennessee got blown out by Oregon, but so would another 100 teams in the world. So I don't have any idea. It's at Florida. Maybe that helps. I think Florida actually is going to win, but I think it's going to be a little closer. I think it's going to be like 10-0.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Florida as well in this one. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think if there is going to be any of these picks that I think that a ranked team could get knocked off, I think
it could be Florida.
I think it's Florida.
The interesting thing, I think that Florida's defense has a better chance of scoring than their offense.
Yeah. That'll be interesting to see. Okay, Southern Methodist at Texas A&M.
Giggum. Yeah. Aggies big.
Yeah, they win huge. Colorado State at Alabama.
Roll Tide.
Yeah,
roll
Tide roll. Troy at Mississippi State. These are some...
Now, interesting that the head coach at Troy, Larry Blakeney, I believe, he's one of the longest tenured coaches in college football. That does not mean anything here, and they are going to lose big.
I agree. Missouri at Indiana.
I don't know. They don't like that old man football in Missouri. And, you know, I don't know what they play in Indiana.
Oh, gosh.
But I think it's going to be a tight game between two teams that aren't very good. And I think that Missouri will still win.
Yeah, I still believe in that SEC speed. So that's what I'm going with.
Well, I don't know. Has Missouri been in the conference long enough to qualify?
Oh, yeah. They qualify instantly. They instantly qualified.
I don't know. Well, I think that they haven't. They're not, you know, they're not really a lifer. They're not a real SEC
school.
That's true.
So. Okay, one more game, and then we'll wrap it up. Auburn at LSU.
I really want to pick Auburn in this one. I really do.
Don't do it.
But, as most people could tell you, I mean, if you've ever watched LSU and Auburn play, those games are down to the wire. This is going to be a close game. The loudest crowd ever. If anybody remembers the earthquake game. Supposedly, there's one game that was at LSU between Auburn and LSU in the early 90s, I think, where they actually were so loud, there was readings on the decibel. It felt like an earthquake. So it's going to be a rocking crowd. It's going to be a tight game. I think LSU will win it 21-20.
Yeah, I think it's going to be kind of close too, but not quite that close though.
Oh, I think Auburn could win the game. I think they really could upset this one.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick LSU, but if you are a gambler, you might want to pick Auburn because I think Auburn could go in there and win the game.
Yeah. That does it for our picks this week. We're pretty similar. There's just two games that me and Andrew differ on, so there won't be too much separation in the standings this week regardless, but before we wrap up there was one email that we wanted to just get, not a question, more of a comment, but
right, yeah, somebody a listener front who actually listening to the show and we asked them, we said if anybody knows the answer to this. Well, we did get an answer. The last time that Georgia and Georgia Tech were both ranked at the end of the season, do you know the answer, Will?
I do not.
It is 1966. Wow. It was Bobby Dodd's last year at Tech. Georgia actually won the game, and it was the last time both were in the top 10 going into the game.
Wow.
So it's been a few years.
Well, Andrew, I think that that's a podcast.
Wraps it up.
Yeah, wraps it up. Thanks for listening, everybody. Again, this is the Fourth and Short Podcast. You should email us at fourthandshortpodcast@gmail.com. That said, my name is Will Patton.
And I'm Andrew Brown.
Thanks for listening. Next time.